homie.
Be excellent and people will notice you.
Actively listen and be a problem solver.
You need to be getting to work early and staying late. No one cares as much about your career as you do.
To be great, you've got to win.
On today's episode of Corporate Homie,
I read the book Becoming.
Everybody can't come on your journey to the top.
I don't know what else I can do but this.
Is sometimes even trusted people in your life will mislead you. What's up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast. Woo woo.
It's the first podcast of 2019.
Happy New Year, homies.
Yeah.
Hope you guys are off to a great 2019. It's going to be an amazing year for all of the homies. And, it's a good time to get started. And we wanted to do something a little special for the first podcast of 2019. We are, as you guys know, for the homies who've been listening to us for a while, we have a serious girl crush on Michelle Obama.
Yes, and so
we think she's our line sister,
or cousin, or BFF, or all that good stuff. And so, you know, it's really good to be back. We missed you guys. Hope you guys all had a refreshing break. I know I enjoyed my time off. And one of the things I did during our time off is I read the book Becoming, and I actually went and saw Michelle Obama.
Yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to go see Michelle Obama, but I mean, I understand those tickets were hot, really difficult to get, but I did have an opportunity to read the book. So we thought that we would share our thoughts on the book, and for those homies who have not yet read the book, we won't say anything that will discourage you from reading the book, but I would encourage all of the homies to read the book. And I've seen some of the male homies on social media saying that they, you know, weren't sure if they were going to read the book, that they thought that the book was for women. And I don't think that. I think the book is for everyone.
Oh, I agree. And so, you know, in preparing for this episode, I realized I had so many thoughts, but I thought since this is a business focused episode, I would keep my takeaways centered around, you know, lessons I learned in the context of business, because like you said, I think I could almost probably do, I don't know how you feel, my takeaways in every aspect of my life having read the book.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So it is a quick read. It's not a wonky read at all. I found it very easy.
You thought it was a quick read? I did not think it was a quick read. I thought it was an easy read, but it's a big book.
Well, for me, they're the same, one and the same.
Oh, okay.
If it's an easy read, I can get through it quickly. And what I'm just trying to communicate to the homies is, you know, it's not a political book. It's a memoir.
Yes.
You know, it's a memoir. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't, my politics don't align with theirs, or I don't want to get into, you know, any kind of like policy type. It's not that. This is a book about her life, her memoir. So just want to give a little context for those people who may think, oh, I don't read political books. It's not a political book.
That is a really great point. Yeah, it's not. I completely agree with that. It is not a political book.
So I guess just to get started, like, did you like the book?
I loved the book.
Loved it.
Loved it. Yes. I mean, the book, as you would say, was everything.
Absolute goodness.
It was really good.
I do realize that I did not journal as a child because she has such vivid memories of early childhood. And I think her journals that she said she went back and got really helped shape us to see it
in
colorful language.
Yeah, I've never been a journaler. I've tried journaling over the years. I'm not good at you know, just that, probably because I'm just not good at anything that requires routine in that way.
I wonder, I'd love to hear from the homies on this. I'm not good at journaling either. I wonder if, you know, highly loquacious, extreme extroverts are journalists.
Huh, that's a good point. We should probably do a whole episode on that later. But that's a really good point, because you have to sit down and be alone with your thoughts and be still in ways that extroverts don't get their energy. And that's a good way for introverts to go back and get re-energized. But we're all tasked. Let's back to the book. But that's a yeah, I very much enjoyed the book. I both read the book and listened to the audio because I was, like I said, I found the book to be very big. I enjoyed it. But being the nerd that I am, I was pressed to finish the book before I actually saw her speak, you know, just because I wanted to make sure that I had consumed all the information. And so I actually was driving to San Antonio. It was probably very early in the book, maybe a third of the way through, and decided, oh, you know, I'm going to grab the audio version too so I can get some chapters in on the drive. And you know, I've never really done an audiobook before, and so they come on and they said, "This is Becoming by Michelle Obama," and it says, "Read by the author." And then I was like, "Oh, she reads the book.
We're gonna be together on this journey."
Exactly. Yeah.
Outstanding. Yeah, outstanding. I too very much enjoyed the book and saw, as you mentioned earlier, so many great lessons, personally and professionally, but. Like I said, what we're going to do today is center around kind of professional key takeaways that we got from the book. So I don't know if you want to go ahead and jump right in.
Sure.
With your first takeaway.
So my first takeaway from the book is it's okay to swerve. So Michelle, or, you know, Mish, if you've read the book, talks.
Yeah, we don't call her Shelly anymore because we realize that's not her nickname.
Not her nickname. It's Mish. When you read,
we're sorry, girl.
That's right. Mish really talks about being the kind of person who was very linear in her thoughts, very linear in her ambition, very linear in her career trajectory, and had patterned her career to just, I think the way she said the book was just keep going up, you know, rings on the ladder. And then meeting Barack Obama, and he was the kind of person, her word, not mine, that would swerve, would just sort of get out the lane and do his own thing. And it really caused her to stop and think about that for her own career, and ultimately did cause her to swerve. And so I do think it's an important lesson for any homie, that even though you may have gone to school to be an engineer, or gone to school to be a doctor, or gone to school to be a lawyer, or received your MBA, you don't, or banker, you can change your mind even this late in the game or this early in the game, depending on where you are in the career. In your career, and swerve and do something else. So that's my first tip, is it's okay to swerve.
I think that's a fantastic first tip, and I think box checking is real, and I think it is even more so real for people of color. And the reason being is because I think, as she mentions in the book, so many of our older relatives and family members, you know, did not have the opportunities that we had, and so you feel obligated to honor those opportunities by not getting distracted with passion and staying in a good job and getting that education, because, you know, Uncle so-and-so couldn't get in the union. And I do think that the probably the key takeaway, just picking back on yours, and then I'll get to my first one, you can swerve when you have education. Education, you know, a JD and an MBA are some of the more flexible degrees that allows you to swerve and say, oh, I'm going to go work at a nonprofit, or I'm going to go and work at a small business. But I think that high quality education allows for the ability to swerve. So
that's a great point. That's a really great point.
I think it's tough to swerve if you don't have that. My first key takeaway was when the guidance counselor in high school told her she wasn't Princeton material. And what that said to me is sometimes even trusted people in your life will mislead you.
Oh, that's a word. It's a word. Put your finger up. I mean, put your hand up. That's a word. That's right. So true, though.
Right. Sometimes it's your mom telling you What did her mom say? Oh, I think you need to just make this
money. I just make this money.
Worry about being happy later. So I think that the guidance counselor probably did what a lot of folks do is, it's not so much that they don't think you're Princeton material. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. I don't know. Sometimes people are telling you not to try something, not to get out there, not to be bold to protect you because they don't want you to get hurt. Right, I don't want you to go to college with all those people that have money, and then you're going to feel insecure and you're going to feel less than. And so I would say stay in what you know you're supposed to do, and sometimes that means going against the advice of trusted family members, advisors, so on and so forth.
That's an amazing point and a really good takeaway, especially in connection with, you know, your careers, because oftentimes people, you know, that's the first thing they do. Is reach for trusted advisors, sometimes even before they stop and think about what they desire for themselves. And so I think that is a very good point, because, and it also is a good point because I don't think the guidance counselor was hating on her.
No, I don't think so either.
Right. And I think sometimes, like you said, they're trying to protect you. And I think sometimes people just can't see that at all. Maybe they've never known anyone to do the thing that you were trying to do. So you're telling them that you want to be the executive vice president of the organization, and they're looking at you thinking, I've never seen anyone like you ascend to executive vice presidentship. You're not going to be able to do that. And so they're limited by their own understanding of possibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's a fantastic point. So my, I guess it's now going to be the third point or next point, sort of piggybacks off my first point, which is skills are transferable. Mm. So one of the things that I really understood from the book is she worked a lot of different jobs that
once
really
she decided
not
to swerve, she kept doing it. Yeah.
And so that's probably another lesson, is that stepping out of your comfort zone allows you the confidence to continue to keep doing that. Once, right. And I remember thinking that the first time I quit a job and then went to the next organization and was successful there, then you start realizing like, oh, I wasn't just successful there because those people really liked me and they were giving me a shot. Like,
It's me.
And so your skills are transferable in that Michelle ended up working lots of different jobs in lots of different industries. So she worked in government, then she worked in healthcare. She did
education,
a community nonprofit.
Higher education.
So she worked in very different arenas, industries, genres, whatever word you like to use. And what that tells me is that there were skills that she was acquiring from each position that transferred into a new position. And so when you start realizing that your skills are going to be transferable, it will also open up the possibilities. I think a lot of times homies stay stagnant in places because they think, well, I don't know what else I can do but this. You know, I don't know what else I could do. I'm just a, you know, whatever. And they fill in the blank.
Architect,
I'm just a banker.
Or whatever, yeah.
Not realizing you're more than a banker. You're an executive. You know how, or you know P&A. You know, I mean, P&Ls. You know this. You know that. That can turn into lots of other jobs. And so I just, the skills are transferable.
I love that. I was actually having a conversation with somebody who was asked to lead a nonprofit, the chair of the board, and she was saying, well, I don't know anything about that. And I said, sure you do. You've done this, that, and the other. You've been creative this way. And she said, oh my gosh, I've never thought of it in that way. And so I think you're 100% correct. Skills are transferable in everyone, whether you are an engineer, architect, banker, finance, it doesn't matter. You're doing something every day on a daily basis that could transfer to another industry successfully and not
and
where you have
not
to take
sure,
four steps back. Yeah.
Right. And if you're not sure how to do that, perhaps that's when you do go and find
a career development coach.
Or somebody like that to help you glean out from, you know, sit down with somebody, explain to them what you've done over your career, and they can help you, you know, get those skills written out so you understand how they're going to transfer to something else.
Absolutely. My next point is not going to be popular at all, but it was when she discussed the Jeremiah Wright issue in the book, is everybody can't come on your journey to the top.
Oh, so you consider them like they left Jeremiah? He had to stay
without a
behind.
Question. And to the extent that I was confused about that in the book, where she called him paranoid and this, that, and the other, and I was like, oh, okay, like they have completely left him in that.
Disassociated, in the words of Bobby White. Disassociate.
Yeah. And so seriously, though, but sometimes, and it's not about the Dr. Wright per se, because I don't want to get into it, because we could spend an hour just on him. It is the concept, I think, for what I took from it. This is just my opinion, is they made a decision that we're trying to lead and run the country. And this could potentially be an Achilles heel for us doing that. And we're not as vested in keeping that to get, because we feel like we could do a greater good. And what I took from that is that everybody can't come with you to the top.
I'm trying to take it to the top. And so you have to be, you're saying you have to be judicious about your circle as you move.
Huh. And I know people don't want to hear that, because they want to say, like, you know, no new friends.
I
got all my day ones. All your day ones came right to the top.
You're going to need a day 55.
You need a day 80.
Right. You might have same, what was the Biggie line? Same phone number, same address, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good.
I'm too early in the morning. Yeah. We're recording this podcast at like 6 a.m. Too early for me to think about my good rap lyrics. But you're saying sometimes you need a new address. Sometimes you need a new phone number. Sometimes, that's a good.
I said it wasn't going to be popular.
But I feel that for somebody. I feel that for somebody. Amen. I feel that for somebody.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm with it. Oh, okay. My next point is relationships matter.
Come on. Can't be transactional. Got to be relational.
Right. And so almost every job that Michelle Obama obtained was connected, or she found through a relationship that she had, or it was a domino effect of a relationship she had. So, you know, she would have a relationship with someone, and then they might have a relationship with someone else, and then that might be how the job happened. And so we've talked about this on many episodes, that it is important to maintain relationships, and that you cannot wait until you desire something from someone to cultivate a relationship. By the same token, I don't think you should need something from someone to commence a relationship. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sometimes it's okay just to meet someone to think, I know I've done this many times, you know, this person seems to be in a place that I think I might want to go, or they're doing things that I find interesting, and I just like to get to know them better. And so when I meet with them or want to get to know them, I don't have anything that I want from them. I don't need anything from them. I'm just trying to get to know them.
Right. And I think that the best relationships are cultivated when you don't have a predetermined agenda, when they get to happen organically. And sometimes, like you said, that just means that you're authentically connecting with someone amongst shared interests, or they're a little older and they've achieved some things that you're trying to learn from them, but you don't have a specific agenda, like, oh, this person sits on this board and one day I want to be on that board, or one day I want to chair that board, and so I'm going to get to know them. And quiet as it's kept, people can feel that kind of pressed energy that's not authentic. So I do think that the whole idea of relationships matter. I mean, I think probably one of the most key relationships in the book is Valerie Jarrett, and how I know I did not have an appreciation for this until I read the book, that Valerie Jarrett is one of those special people that was both a friend to Michelle, a friend to Barack, and then a friend to them as a couple. And there are very few people that have the ability to do that in people's lives, where they can be a friend to all three. Yeah, so.
You know, that is so funny, because one the big things that I learned, spoiler alert, I didn't understand that Michelle knew Valerie Jarrett first. That was a big
eye opener. Epiphany.
Like, I was like, what? I just assumed, because Valerie Jarrett has been so instrumental in the Obama White House and administration, that her connection had, I don't know why, but I just assumed it had to have commenced with Barack. What's your next takeaway?
My next takeaway is you can only control yourself. And when she was getting frustrated by the lack of routine and lack of consistency early in the marriage, and she was frustrated and was like, oh, me and the girls are staying up late waiting on him to come home, she decided, we're not, and I don't get me wrong, it's not like she had a light bulb. There was a lot of counseling and things that went into that, but she got more comfortable when she changed her. Okay, this is what we're doing. We eat at 6. The girls go to bed at 8. I'm getting up and having my mom come over and watch the girls early so I can go to the gym. But my point is, she did not look for her partner to change. She changed to get what she needed. And so sometimes when you're unhappy in a job, in a relationship, in a family encounter, the person that you can control is you. So you've got to adjust you, your behavior.
Only person you control is
right.
you.
Right. And so that right. was huge for me. Because, like, as we always say, people gone people. You know, Demetra's going to be Demetra.
Right.
You know, whatever. So you...
Demetra, right,
you can
right.
only control you. And I thought that was a powerful narrative.
Right. And so that's a real important, you know, task. I actually was having this conversation yesterday with a homie about being unhappy at work, and they were just talking about how much the organization was changing. And as you're saying, it was very apparent to me that they were desiring for the organization to be the organization that they started, in which they started, and not the organization that it was becoming. Mm-hmm. Here we go, pun intended, becoming and the organization that it is today. And all I kept thinking is what you're saying, and I sort of shared that was, well, the organization is what it is. And so you can't change the culture of the organization. You can't change how, because you're not in management or power. And so if the organization doesn't fit what you want, then what you can change is you. So you can either change your reaction to the new culture, or you can change where you work, right? You can change yourself. You have the ability. So that's a great point. It's you that has to sort of figure out. So my last takeaway from the book is you have to be willing to take risk. So, you know, the book is full of risk. You realize the risk that she is taking, the risk that he is taking, the risk that they have to take as a family. You know, to achieve the success that they've had, even some of that was to live in, you know, in an unstructured environment, or even her to pick the phone up or write all the letters she did when she decided she wanted to leave the law firm and basically cold call a bunch of people and have informational interviews. That's really uncomfortable and risky. You know, some people would even say, well, now people are going to know you're looking for a job, and what if it gets out? So I always say, you know, I think we even tweeted about this a couple of weeks ago. You cannot have success without engaging risk. And so you got to lean into risk, so to speak, as opposed to running away.
Well, you know, I love that. In banking, we say, you know, big risk, big reward. Little risk, little reward. And I think the book is a good reminder that life is the same way. So, you know, finally, I thought we would just kind of, you know, share, you know, what does becoming mean to each of us, and how has that definition changed from reading the book? And we've essentially talked about it this entire podcast episode. But for me, becoming is not a single place. It's something that can change over time. It's ever evolving, and almost if it isn't changing, you're not becoming. You just are. But you're not becoming.
Yes.
You just are.
Yes, and it, you know, I definitely agree with everything you just said, and I actually don't think I could say it more eloquently than you did, but it reminds me of something that Big Mama used to say, which is, you know, life is either pushing or pulling you. But you're rarely staying the same. And I do think that that's what people think, is that they can be stagnant. And you are, what I thought is, you're always becoming something. So you're either evolving into something greater, or you're becoming something less, you know, and deteriorating. So It is a wonderful book. As Bimitra said, really encourage everyone to read it. I think there's something in there for everyone. It's really nicely written. It's very easily, like you said, it's an easy read. It's not a, I didn't find it to be a quick read, but it is very easy to read it. And it reads almost like a novel, even though it's a memoir.
Yeah, she definitely had a ghostwriter that did a very nice job to help her collect her thoughts. Yeah.
Yes. Are you, I haven't even asked you this, are you going to go see her on the next leg of the tour? Where she's released all these new dates?
So I was trying to see her since she released some Florida dates, but the Florida date she released is Mother's Day weekend and also graduation weekend. And my little mentee is graduating from her MBA in Atlanta that weekend. So I don't think that I'm going to be able to see her in Florida, which I've got to look. And now, like, when the dates come out, if you don't get a ticket the day the tickets go on sale, you're not going to get a ticket. Like, yeah, that's the Sunrise Florida. Florida. That's the one that's in Miami, down in Miami. Yeah. So.
Oh, Sunrise is Miami.
Yes, Fort Lauderdale. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So.
But would love to hear from the homies what you guys thought of the book. Did you read the book? If not, why didn't you? You know what? We'd love to hear from you. That we really enjoyed it and wanted to share with you guys. And as always, we appreciate all of the support. Thank you for listening. If you can always. If you have any questions, you can always email us at info@corporatehomie.com.
Oh, right. And if you want us to speak at your organization, you can reach us at that same email. And then, of course, you can catch us on all places social at Corporate Homie. Homie is H-O-M-I-E. And until next time,
hustle hard, homies.
All of you, get you a twin. Get you another homie.